Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Dorothy Gundy, Mario Ritter, John Russell, and Christopher Jones Cruz. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Katie Weaver will have this week's personal technology report. But first, here is Dorothy Gundy.
An aid group says 5,000 people have fled fighting near Iraq's northern city of Mosul and arrived at a refugee camp in Syria. Save the Children said Wednesday the refugees have fled to the Al-Hol camp in northeastern Syria during the past 10 days. The group said about 1,000 more were waiting to cross the border. Earlier this week, Iraqi and Kurdish forces launched an offensive to retake Mosul from Islamic State militants. Tariq Qadir is head of Save the Children's Mosul response team. He said families are arriving at the Syrian camp with nothing but the clothes on their backs. He added that the Al-Hol camp is not well equipped to receive new refugees. Save the Children aid workers report conditions are getting worse around Mosul, and thousands more people are expected to flee the area soon. About 18,000 Iraqi troops and 10,000 Kurdish forces are battling IS fighters around Mosul. More than 100 U.S. forces are taking part in the offensive. U.S. military officials say the U.S. forces are involved in planning and decision-making instead of direct combat. The Islamic State group captured Mosul, Iraq's second largest city, in 2014. There are an estimated 3,000 to 5,000 IS fighters around the city. A U.S.-led coalition is supporting the offensive. A coalition spokesman said Tuesday the operation is so far on or ahead of schedule. In Turkey, the head of the Turkish Red Crescent organization said up to 400,000 people may flee the fighting in Mosul. Kerem Kenik told the Associated Press that coalition forces had not planned well for the humanitarian part of the Mosul offensive. He warned that officials will not be ready for the large flow of new refugees. He pointed out that Iraq already shelters more than 3 million displaced people. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, said the organization has 5 camps open in the region to provide shelter to refugees. Currently, these camps can only take in about 45,000 people. But Grandi said a total of 11 camps will be ready in the coming weeks that could shelter 120,000 people. In Washington Tuesday, President Barack Obama told reporters that recapturing Mosul would be a difficult fight. But he expressed hope that IS will be driven from the city in time.
Perhaps a million civilians are still living there. And so in addition to rooting out ISIL, our focus jointly is on the safety and the humanitarian aid for civilians who are escaping the fight. That's going to be a top priority.
I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Researchers say concern about the elections in the United States is increasingly affecting the American economy. Election campaigns can often affect financial markets. Studies show stock prices are more likely to jump or drop sharply during a campaign than at other times. Also, research shows that both business leaders and the general public delay decisions to buy or invest when the future is unclear. A research group called Macroeconomic Advisors says campaign promises about trade, taxes, and other issues have a real effect on financial markets. The company is based in St. Louis, Missouri. Joel Pracken works for Macroeconomic Advisors. Speaking to VOA on Skype, he said investors seem to like Hillary Clinton, the presidential candidate for the Democratic Party. He said stock prices were often higher on days when public opinion studies showed her defeating the Republican candidate, Donald Trump. Art Durnev teaches finance at the University of Iowa. He told VOA on Skype that the influence of politics on major parts of the U.S. economy has increased.
Politics affects financial markets much, much more now than, let's say, 10, 20, or 30 years ago.
If this is true, some of the reasons could be tied to questions about taxes and rules affecting industry and employment. Research shows that companies often delay important business decisions when they do not see a clear path forward. For example, a company may be unwilling to sell stock to the public if its leaders are concerned about economic conditions. Durnev says companies can avoid spending money in other ways.
They start hoarding cash, they don't want to spend. Major corporations delay their hiring, their firing decision. Everything is on hold for them.
Political uncertainty also affects consumer buying, experts say. Economists note consumer spending is responsible for more than two-thirds of economic activity nationwide. Joel Pracken said, not being sure of the future slows down decision-making.
Buying a car, buying a house, starting a business, managing a business, making investment decisions, when they're uncertain about the environment in which they'll be making those decisions, there is a natural tendency to just pause, take a breath, sit on your hands, and wait until the uncertainty clears.
However, experts disagree on whether uncertainty plays a larger or smaller role in an individual's economic decisions. Other issues, such as actual energy costs and interest rates, can also have a strong effect. Bill Galston is with the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C.
There's a lot of professional disagreement among economists as to how weighty uncertainty is in relationship to more fundamental market evaluations.
Political uncertainty, however, rarely ends with an election. The winner of the presidential election will have to work with a U.S. Congress that has shown little support for the proposals of either Clinton or Trump. I'm Mario Ritter.
Rami Adham was deeply troubled by television reports he saw about children in his former home of Aleppo, Syria. The reports said Syrian government attacks were terrorizing the children. He wanted to help them. Adham now lives in Finland with his 6 children. He told VOA that he used money he had saved to buy toys to bring to Syria. He also gathered some of his own children's toys. He began smuggling toys into the city in 2012. The trips were very dangerous. The 43-year-old has traveled more than 28 times to the city he left 27 years ago. He estimates he has brought about 20,000 toys to the city. He spent about 2 weeks in Aleppo in September. He brought toys donated by people throughout the world. He also brought some food and medicine. He and other volunteers carry the goods in cloth bags on their backs. On most trips, he can bring about 80 kilograms of goods into Aleppo. The trips to Aleppo begin with a flight from Helsinki to Turkey. Adham then walks across the border into Syria. These crossings are illegal. Only aid workers are permitted to cross from Turkey into Syria. He says he has faced serious threats to his life. But people in Syria help him. He says early this year he was trapped in a place during a bombing raid. Adham was badly wounded. Healthcare workers treated him at a small hospital in Aleppo. He had a broken arm and had shrapnel in his back and neck. He was later sent to Turkey for treatment. Adham leads a non-profit group that receives toys from throughout Europe. The group also helps 400 children in Syria whose parents have died. And it operates 3 schools in refugee camps near Aleppo that are controlled by rebels. He says the group helps educate more than 2,000 Syrian children. He says his group began with his friends and neighbors in Finland. It has now expanded to other cities in Finland and to other countries. He says the Syrian civil war has killed, wounded, or displaced hundreds of thousands of children. Justin Forsyth is an official of UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund. He recently described the children of Aleppo as trapped in a living nightmare there are no words left to describe the suffering they are experiencing, he said. Recently, the top UN official trying to end the civil war warned that rebel-held eastern Aleppo could be destroyed by the end of the year. Stefan de Mistura said if Syrian and Russian airstrikes on the city continue, thousands of Syrian civilians, not terrorists, will be killed and many of them wounded. Experts estimate there are as many as 100,000 children among the 250,000 people trapped in rebel-held areas of Aleppo. I'm John Russell.
The city of Houston, Texas, has the largest community of Vietnamese in the United States, outside of California. Houston is the fourth largest city in the United States. Between 150,000 and 300,000 Vietnamese live in Houston. It is difficult to know an exact number, because many Vietnamese do not complete census forms in the United States. They do not trust government officials in the U.S. because they learned not to trust government officials in Vietnam. The Vietnamese population in Houston and other Texas cities is growing. That is because many Vietnamese who have family members in the United States are able to get visas designed to reunify families. These newly arrived Vietnamese bring strong connections to the language and culture of their country to the Houston Vietnamese community. Many of them listen to Radio Saigon Houston. Vu Thanh Thuy talks with listeners who call to discuss their families, politics, and events in Vietnam. She owns the station with her husband. They were both journalists in Vietnam. She then became a reporter for a newspaper in San Diego, California. Many Vietnamese in the United States listen to her. Some Vietnamese stations in other parts of the United States broadcast her program. And some people in Vietnam listen to it on the Internet.
This morning, our station did an interview with a priest in Vietnam who was leading a group of 18,000 protesters in the central of Vietnam against the abolition.
Vu Thanh Thuy says people who listen to the station are very interested in what is happening in Vietnam. She says they are worried about Chinese claims to Vietnamese territory. She says the station broadcasts programs on many issues.
There's a show to answer any kind of question. And if you come up with a question and ask me, I will tell you when to listen and, you know, at what time, what day to listen.
The radio station is in a part of Houston where many Vietnamese live and work. Even the street signs are in Vietnamese. Near the station are a large Vietnamese Buddhist pagoda and a Vietnamese Catholic church. The shopping center where the station has its studios has many Vietnamese restaurants, tea shops, bakeries, and health food stores. Many people who work and shop in the area speak only Vietnamese. For some who have recently arrived from Vietnam, as well as for some who have been here many years, the area is a place where they can be comfortable. Vu Thanh Thuy says the station helps people who grew up in Vietnam adjust to their new life in the United States. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
This is what's trending today. People on social media are reacting to photographs of a blue-eyed tea seller from Pakistan. Photographer Jaya Ali was carrying her camera when she discovered the man working at a market in Islamabad. Ali had no idea he would become an internet sensation when she placed the photo on Instagram earlier this week. The young man has light blue eyes, dark hair, and even a little facial hair. He captivated social media users, first in Pakistan and then around the world. People wanted to know who he was and where they could find him. They called him Chaiwala. The name means someone who makes tea in Pakistan. In the past 24 hours, the hashtag Chaiwala, with two different spellings, trended in Pakistan. Ali's photo of the good-looking man has thousands of likes and views. Once the photo went viral, she went back to the market in search of the young man. It turns out his name is Arshad Khan. He is 18 years old and reportedly has 17 brothers and sisters. Television cameras followed, and many women went to the market just to get a look at him. People asked if he wanted to model clothing or get an acting job in movies or television. As it so happens, he already said yes to one offer. A clothing company in Islamabad has offered to pay him to wear some of its clothes. The story recalls another photograph that also went viral. Jeremy Meeks caused a sensation in 2014 when a California police department posted a photo of him on the internet after he was arrested. Many people said Meeks was handsome, too. He signed a contract with a modeling agency while he was in jail. Some of his first photos came out in June. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
Every time we get behind the wheel of a car, we put our lives and the lives of others at risk. Self-driving cars are designed to reduce those risks by letting technology control our vehicles. Accident rates for self-driving cars have been much lower than the rates for human-driven cars. Google's self-driving car has had only 13 collisions after traveling 1.8 million miles. As humans, we can make moral choices in avoiding accidents. To avoid hitting a child, for example, human drivers might sharply turn a car away from the child, even if others may be injured. But what moral choices can self-driving cars make? Researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, studied this issue. They have developed the Moral Machine website to help explore the choices self-driving cars should make. MIT says the Moral Machine is a platform for gathering a human perspective on moral decisions made by machine intelligence, such as self-driving cars. You can use the Moral Machine to be the judge and help self-driving cars decide what to do in different driving scenarios. Then, see how your choices compare to those others have made. Moral Machine choices can help MIT researchers examine the decisions self-driving cars should make. Users can also take part, but not have their choices included in MIT research. A video on YouTube introduces Moral Machine. The Moral Machine website lets you choose how you would react in a collision. You are shown two possible traffic situations, and you choose between them. In all situations, the brakes have failed on the self-driving car. The car will remain moving in the current direction, or it will turn. An accident will take place. You choose how many living beings would be hurt or killed, and who those victims should be. In one situation, there may be a female doctor, a child, two dogs, and a homeless person who would be killed. In the other situation, you might have two babies and a cat who would be killed. You choose who lives and who dies. The Moral Machine website has many situations and many possible outcomes. When you click on the situation of your choice, it will be highlighted. Then, the next situation appears. At the end of the session, you are shown the results based on the choices you made. The results show which character you were most likely to save and which character you were most likely to have die. Results also show how much each factor means to you, such as age, societal importance, or obedience to traffic laws. After you have finished, you are offered a chance to use the Moral Machine again. Each time, you are shown different situations. You can also create your own situations. You can also look at situations others have created. You do not make choices in these situations, but a discussion section is connected. You can add your thoughts and read what others have posted about each situation. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.